We acknowledge the traditional owners and custodians of the land on which company has been recorded, the Whadjuk people of the Noongar Nation. We respect their continuing culture and the past and present contributions they have made to this region. You're listening to Company, the podcast connecting Australian artists, where we talk all things personal, professional, and spiritual. Joining you, as always, are your hosts, Georgia Kennedy and Tiana Catalano. Hello, and welcome back to Company. This week, we have a very special guest. Her name is Abigail King, and she is a financial coach for creatives, empowering you to take control of your money and your career.
Abby is an actor and voiceover artist who's based in Melbourne, but most recently, she started a financial coaching business for creatives, which empowers you to take control of your money and your career. So that's super exciting. We had such a great chat with her.
Yes. So our chat with Abby was so good. And Georgia and I listened to She's on the Money heaps. And it was just really nice to hear from a performer and hear specifically about how we can help ourselves when we don't have a consistent, you know, income and stuff. So I'm really excited to release this episode, and we're pretty exhausted right now. We've been in the theater for 2 weeks. We're so lucky. We're so grateful, but we're doing a chorus line at the moment. So, you know, our whole production team, we're all third year music theater students at WAPA. So kudos to us for getting this together literally a morning before going into the theater. And can I just add, I'm really freaking proud of Georgia and Deirdre for being some of the semi-finalists for the AOC initiative. So woohoo!
Aw, thank you.
So exciting. There's lots of not so good things happening in the industry, but these little wins and, you know, little moves forward are really exciting. And we might have a special episode coming up with someone who has to do with the AOC, so stay tuned.
Yeah, very exciting.
But before we do that, we will jump into the Riff of the Week.
Whenever you're ready.
Okay. Riff of the Week. Riff of the Week.
All right, I'll do my riff first. I watched The Social Dilemma last week, I think it was. It's on Netflix, and it's basically, it's a lot of high-powered men from Silicon Valley talking about how they started up Twitter and Facebook and YouTube and all the algorithms that they used. And it basically shows us how much social media takes control of our lives. There are some really tacky like videos that they use throughout, like dramatizations of like men inside the minds of like Facebook, and that they're like controlling you, and it's really naff and corny. So if you kind of just don't pay attention to that and pay attention to the documentary-esque style interviews, it's super interesting and very alarming. But I think the most alarming thing to me was how social media is so polarizing and makes us so divided and so right and so left politically, and how it does that intentionally, and intentionally only shows this sort of echo chamber so that you're, I don't know, I think it maybe fosters a society that doesn't want to listen to other people with different opinions. So it's quite scary. It's quite eye-opening. But definitely check out The Social Dilemma and maybe start putting some time limits on your apps or something.
I do that, and it's really good because the amount of times that I go to just press on something out of habit and then it's like locked, and I'm like, why am I doing that?
Yeah, it's scary.
Scary stuff. Well, my riff of the week is going to be a bit of a rant, because I was very inspired by Abby and I had been listening to She's on the Money for a while, and I made a big plunge about a month ago and I deleted Afterpay, and I am very excited to say, people, that I have not re-downloaded it.
Not!
I have not done it, and I am debt free. I'm debt free.
Yeah,
I should be.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. That's future me's problem. That doesn't exist. But yeah, it's really nice to feel like I don't have money disappearing as soon as I get my either minimal pay that I get from doing parties or my, you know, youth allowance, because it was every time I got a payment, like so much of it would go to Afterpay because I just kept on adding things and adding things, and I feel really good about it. And now I just absolutely think twice about doing things because I just live within my means and what money I have, which is really, look, it's not fun. I wouldn't say it's fun because I'm not having as much fun, but, you know, I am being smarter and, you know, making the most of what I have. And also not buying into all the adverts that I see on Instagram about clothes and stuff, because I'm so bad for that. I would just be like, oh my God, Lenny Jane's got $70 leggings. Yeah, I'll get them. That's cheap. No, it's not. So, yeah, I'm pretty proud of myself. I can't say that I've really been watching anything lately because we've been crazy at uni, but I'm having money wins at the moment, and it's probably a good time now that the, you know, allowance is going to be cut down more and more. So I'm pretty chuffed with myself.
Nice one. Yeah, I've deleted Afterpay too. It feels good to not have to pay that every other week. Good one. I like it.
Nice.
Hey, Abby, thank you so much for coming on the show with us. We're very, very keen to talk to you.
Hello, thank you for having me.
So whereabouts are you at the moment?
I am in Melbourne. So yeah, it's been a long time.
It's been a time, yeah. How are you really doing? How are you feeling?
I was doing really well, to be honest. I was, you know, I still have my sourdough starter. He's about 7 months old now. So I'm still making that. And between the coaching and really making the most of all the Zoom classes for acting that have gone online, I was doing really well. And then the last sort of week and a half, 2 weeks, I've just gone, I'm over it. I'm done now. I want to see my friends. I want to go to the movies. I want to sit in a pub courtyard on a Sunday afternoon. So, it's been up and down in the last couple of weeks.
Totally.
I think it kind of happened. Well, we're so lucky. Like Perth has been pretty normal because we're so isolated from everyone. But I think it was like I kind of felt that when I knew the end was coming, and you know that things are going to start to go back to normal, and you start itching for it, and I think that's when it kind of kicks in. Yeah. You're like, I'm going to go insane.
But yeah, because we'd like, all been going. Yeah. We just have to get to the 26th of September when they're going to sort of relook at the lockdown, but that's not the real date. The real date's sort of late October. So it's just been sort of like a dummy date that I've been staggering towards and then realized that I set it too early. It's like I put Christmas in November.
That's really frustrating, but
it is.
Thank you so much for being with us today. And
you are so welcome.
The end.
Something to get out of bed for.
And yeah.
Exactly. Fabulous. And do you have any arts recommendations for us that you've been listening to, watching, or anything over the past few months?
We are probably very behind, but my partner and I have been binging Glow, which was like, I remember everyone talking about it a couple of years ago and I was like, oh, 80s wrestling. Okay, whatever. No, it's so good. It's so good and satisfying. And all of the 80s workout costumes are the best. So that's what we've been really enjoying. Also, we're working our way through the RoboCop movies, which is enjoyable for a different reason.
RoboCop, love that. I love Glow. There's some really badass female characters in that, and they're all so different and unique, and it's such a diverse cast. I love it. Yeah.
It came off the back of us watching Community, which is like a fantastic feel-good comedy that sort of devolved into much broader brushstrokes across the season. And we were watching it and went, you know what? Alison Brie, who is the sort of like bubbly nerd in Community, she managed to avoid becoming this sort of this two-dimensional sort of caricature. And we went, I don't think it's the writers treating her better. I think she's just really phenomenal at working. And so then we were like, hang on a minute, she's in Glow. We need to watch this Glow. And then it's like, oh yeah, no, she's just an incredible performer.
Yeah. No, she is phenomenal and glad. You definitely need to watch it.
I swear I just keep on missing out on these cool TV shows. Like someone will mention another one, I'm like, I've got no idea what that is.
List on my phone is about 30 series long at the moment.
So diving into another question, what made you want to become an artist? Was there a moment for you growing up that made you want to be a writer or an artist? Was there a pivotal point?
Look, it sounds a bit cliche, but looking back with all of my wisdom and knowledge, I think it's always been a path I was going to take, because I vividly remember like reading Enid Blyton, and I was quite a precocious kid, so I would have been like 6 or 7, and always wanting to do whatever the lead character. So it was like, oh, the lead character in this book owns, you know, a haberdashery store or whatever. And I was like, that's what I'm going to do when I grow up. And whatever I was going to do was always what was in the latest book that I was reading. And I would 100% absolutely commit that was what I was going to do with my life. I was going to own a seaside haberdashery store or whatever. I was going to live in a caravan and travel solving mysteries. And so I think it's always been that drive to put myself into stories and to experience life sort of from within them, as opposed to just a reader. And then when I was 11, my hometown, tiny little hometown in New Zealand, had a really strong AmDram society, particularly they had like a youth music theatre company. And so from when I was 10, I forced my mum to take me along to the Q&A evening, because the producers had to tell me that they wouldn't take me till I was 11. I think that was, they were doing Aladdin Junior. And so then when I was 11, I was allowed to do Beauty and the Beast Junior, and I was a Rose Fairy. So it was always, I think, before I even knew what it was or that it would be possible, it was something I was always going to fall into.
Beautiful. Mm-hmm. I love that. I love wanting to be like immersed in the story as opposed to sort of like seeing it as an outside viewer.
Mm.
That's amazing. And then sort of coming into finance, I guess then, what was the point that made you go, I don't want to be a starving artist. I don't want to, you know, be this starving artist trope.
I mean, it's a combination of factors. I've always been a money nerd, always. And I think that stems from the way my parents handled money and talked about money. It was always talked about, you know, my mum, she didn't realize what an impact it was making, but she would sit down at the kitchen table and like spread out all of her statements and like balance the checkbook or whatever it is you used to do in the 90s. And we would, if we wanted something, we would have to put it on lay-by. And so like our little pocket money, and we would go down to Toy World and put down our 50 cents once a week or something. So it was always something that was instilled in me and something that I really enjoyed. So that was actually, I was going to go to music theater school or be an accountant. Those were the only two paths that I was interested in pursuing. So to be honest, I'm surprised it took me this long to do the full circle and come back to the money thing. But I heard stories and I saw friends in situations where I went, this isn't sustainable. You're going to burn out and you're going to have to give up on your dreams because you can't keep this up for another 30 years. And that might be what it takes for you to become a fully independent financial creative. Because if you've got $16,000, $20,000 in credit card debt because you're flying to Edinburgh once a year for fringe festivals, that's just going to keep getting bigger, and you're going to get to a point where you go, you know what? I want a house, or I want to be able to afford to retire, or I want to not be a waiter anymore. And so I just threw a bit of a tantrum and realized that I can't keep just bullying my friends into letting me redo their budgets, and that it needed to go a bit wider. Because I think it's something, you know, drama schools and art schools focus so much on creating you as an artist and then sending you out into the world that they don't really think about how you're going to support yourself once you're out there, and basic things that can really help your longevity as an artist. Because there's a huge difference, I think, between whether you're 35, 40 with $30,000 in debt, or you're still living paycheck to paycheck, or you can't afford to get your car serviced when it's broken down, and being 35, 40, maybe still chasing your dream, but knowing that you're in a financially secure place and you can afford to keep doing this till you're 70 if you still have the drive to, because everything else in your life is supporting that dream, versus everything else in your life sort of screaming at the back of your head that you have to book this next audition or you're never going to be able to pay your rent this month.
That sounds like we're doing a chorus line at the moment at Whopper, and that really needing the job because you need the money because you're a starving artist is sort of a thing. Mm-hmm.
And they can see that in your eyes. There's so many stories about artists who start booking more successfully as soon as they have kids, because all of a sudden they don't have the energy to be screaming, God, I hope I get it. They're just like, God, I hope this audition is done so I can go pick my kid up, or like my kid's in the waiting room, because they just don't have that screaming panic. And I think creatives can smell that. Your casting directors and your producers and your directors, they can see that screaming panic, and it doesn't lend itself to trust.
And I guess like in opposition to that, I've kind of been having thoughts of like already planning what work I'm going to do when I leave so that I've got a steady income, and then going, hang on, wait a minute, but then where do I fit in dance classes, singing lessons, actually having time for myself and being able to go to auditions? And it's like, well, how do you like find that balance? And that's why I was so excited to talk to you, because I think an artist, it's very different to kind of have those budget plans. Like we listen to She's on the Money and it's like, yeah, this is awesome for like someone who can commit to like a part-time contract, a full-time contract, whatever. But for someone who's basically a contract worker, whoa,
right?
What do you do?
And it's this really weird situation where you, cause like, I love She's on the Money and I'm totally adore all of those sort of incredible people doing amazing work. But all those people, most people, their money only has to fund one career and one lifestyle. So it covers their rent, you know, maybe they put some in savings, they do some investing, they might, you know, live their best life financially. But for creatives, our money has to fund two lifestyles, because it's got to cover our rent and our food, hopefully some savings. And then it's also got to fund our classes, our headshots, our workshops, our showreels, flying to Sydney for an audition because you know you're going to regret it if you don't take that opportunity. So it's every dollar that we have has to work twice as hard. But then a lot of times artists are told what industries they should be working in, and those industries are the ones that pay you half as much. So you're seeing these people with, you know, six-figure salaries going, oh, I can't afford to save. I only spend $300 on groceries a week. What am I doing wrong? And your artists are in the back corner going, I earned $36,000 last year and I'm spending $50 a week on groceries. How are you not making this work, six-figure salary person? Because we're used to working so hard. You know, you look at university, and when I was in uni, my friends would be like, oh, I've got one lecture today and I have to be up at 9 o'clock. And I was like, I've been in dance class since 8:30 and I get out of rehearsal at 6 to 9 and I do that 6 days a week. So we just don't realize, I think, and there's a lot of pressure. Creatives put a lot of pressure on themselves to excel. And so many times people will come with me and be like, this is my fault. I'm so bad with money. I'm doing everything wrong. And I'll look at their budget and going, honey, you're nailing this. You just don't have the income to get any more wiggle room here. So that's what we need to look at, because I think there's so many avenues that artists can go to. But the moment you say that you're going to be an artist of any form, suddenly everyone thinks they can have an opinion on what you're going to do for a job, or how much money you're going to earn, or how broke you're going to be. It's like, congratulations, you're going to be an office temp, you're going to teach yoga, you're going to work in a studio or an acting school, or you're going to be a waiter. That's it. That's what you're going to do, and you're going to be really broke, and then you're going to give up when you're 30, and I don't know what people go do after that, because I am not planning to do it. So I think fighting back against that is something that I'm really passionate about, and something that I, if my creatives are open to, I work with them on, of being like, let's find other income streams. Because ideally, as a creative, you want something that's going to pay you the maximum amount of money for the minimum amount of work, and that isn't going to leave you exhausted. Because if you're coming home from 6 hours waitressing, and I mean, I keep going back to that because I did a decade in food and beverage / hospitality, and so I feel it deep in my bones. But if you're coming home from 6 hours and the only thing you have energy to do is just like lie on the floor and maybe eat a sandwich, then that's not helping you be your best creative person. But if you've got something, even if it's you have a skill for PT or for copywriting or for organizing, and you finish whatever that you're doing and you're suddenly like, you know what? I'm on a roll. I'm going to sit down and smash out a couple of pages of the script, or I'm going to sit down really quickly and email a bunch of casting directors. If what you're doing for your day job fuels you, it may not be your dream, but if it sort of fuels you and energizes you and gets you on a roll, then that can only feed into your creative career. So it's sort of finding it's, and it's like, it's hard, but you want something that's sort of going to slot in like a puzzle piece, not something that's going to like drain the life and soul out of you, which unfortunately feels like that's all that's available to us a lot of times.
Yeah. Wow. A lot of that really hit home. That's like full on. I'm going, okay, I can do these six jobs and like be this yoga teacher and like teach acting at this school. And like, it's, and it's right. exhausting and you're right. And you, and I would imagine
and
that you
the
would
path
end the day
that every
and you're
other
spent.
Creative is also taking, then how many yoga teachers are there going to be? And I'm not, I love yoga and I think there are so many incredible yoga teachers, but particularly sort of yoga, Pilates, that sort of thing, it's become like a default. I think because a lot of creatives love that sort of work, like we, you know, we see the benefit that yoga and Pilates has in our own life. But if every single actor is going, I'm going to get qualified and teach in between jobs, then how many yoga and Pilates instructors are fighting for the same limited number of classes to teach? And if you're, you know, you might get paid $60. And this is what I worked out. I used to teach kids classes, dance classes, and $60 an hour, cash in hand, amazing. But then I went, by the time I travel to the school, plan the lesson, teach the lesson, travel home, it's still only $20 an hour. And I would be better working 1 5-hour shift sitting at a desk somewhere. I would come out with more money and they would actually be paying like my tax and super. So it's sort of looking critically at what you're told versus what's actually correct.
Yeah. And on that kind of like tax and super, I think that that was kind of something that came to our attention this year. With our arts management topic is that we kind of forget that you really should be getting that for your future planning, and a lot of contract work means you don't. So mm-hmm. I guess it's like that kind of understanding of, you know, putting the figures together and going, actually, for the amount that I'm getting, I'm really not, you know, planning for the future and, you know, getting those, you know, things in place. So are there any like go-to tips when looking at kind of contract work or anything like that that you should aim for?
So as a financial coach, I'm not able to give taxation or investment advice because there are experts out there who are very good at it. It's their wheelhouse and it's sort of, you know, it's not my main area of interest. But I would say that knowing your worth is so important, and not just your current worth, but your future worth. So something like tax, if you're not withholding that for yourself, when the tax man comes knocking, that money's got to come from somewhere. And the same with super, because you there's a saying, you know your worth, then add tax. But that's not going to serve you when you're 65 and you want to retire. I mean, artists, we'll be 80 and we might be thinking about retiring. If you've been working regularly as a creative but not in a job that's withholding that for you, you might want to retire and find that you can't, because you've missed out on 60 years of savings potential. So my version of that is know your worth and then add tax and super. And I don't care what you do with that. My goal with all of my creatives is that they leave me ready and stable and in control of their money and their money habits enough to go to a financial advisor and say, let's make sure I never go hungry again, whether that be investing or putting it in their super or having investment properties. That's people who are much better and more interested in that than me. And I want every single artist to have one of those people on speed dial, because no one else will look after us. We have to look after ourselves. And if we're not paying into our super 40 hours a week, paycheck every fortnight, 4 weeks of holiday a year if you're lucky, and doing that till you're 65, if we don't have that behind us, we have to have something else. Because otherwise, you're going to get to the end of this race and you're not going to have a crash mat there to catch you. And you can't go back and redo that. The greatest thing that you can do for your money is give it time. And if you have not thought about that until 5 years before you go, you know what, I'd really just like to retire to a tiny house in France and look after some goats. If you only think about that 5 years before it happens, then you just can't make up for 40 years of a little bit here and there, which really accumulates. So sorry, I'm getting, as you can tell, I'm so passionate about it because it doesn't come naturally to a lot of artists. They're bored by it, but they're not interested by it. But if you build those habits, then you don't have to be excited about it. You just have to sit down once a month with a coffee or maybe a bottle of wine and just do it, because the difference that it's going to make to you is huge, but you can't ignore it. You just can't. You cannot. It's a business. And I think that's something that I wish I had known earlier. And I think as well, just coming back to the knowing your worth thing, a lot of things come easily to creatives. And we don't always realize that they don't come easily to other people, and that those people will pay us a lot of money for it. So I know people who are hired out as consultants to go to like big firms and do a day, and their consultancy firm will charge $2,000 for a day of their service, whether that be running team building exercises or teaching improv or helping their staff know how to talk confidently in presentations or whatever it is that normal people do. But as an artist, we're so used to constantly having to fight for our own worth and to take underpaid gigs, to take that, you know, the musical that we rehearse for 6 months for, and then it goes up for 8 shows and you get paid $60 after the profit share or whatever, that we don't realize that what comes inherently to us, other people will pay a lot of money to have access to. And they also, there's a lot of people, and this is sort of areas that I encourage creatives to look into, because a lot of the real people in out in the world there, a lot of those huge firms, they have budgets and they have no real grasp of what money is anymore. They've kind of lost it. So you can really, like, what they pay people to do things is insane. There's no sort of basis of reality for it. So as a creative, if we can tap into that and you can somehow find something that you love doing and that's really effortless for you, and you can walk into an office, do it for a day and get $2,000, why would you not be tapping into that? But if someone quoted you and was like, hey, I want you to come in for 8 hours, we're going to give you a full buffet lunch, and we want you to run some like fun team building exercises for our contact center staff, you'd be like, okay, yeah, well, you know, $30 an hour times 8, and then, oh, that looks a bit high, maybe I'll take it down. And you might only quote $250, and they're not going to tell you that you're worth more. So I think as an industry, that's something that is ingrained in us, and that has been ingrained in us through the huge amount of unpaid and underpaid work that we do. But we forget that outside of our industry, there's so much more opportunity. And hopefully as you become more confident in petitioning for your own value out there in whatever field that you find you might want to work in to fund your creative career, hopefully that comes back in and you become a lot more confident and assured of your own value and going, well, no, this contract is great, but I need you to add tax and super to that. Thank you.
Fabulous.
I'm gesturing like people can see me, but they can't. Just trust me, I'm gesturing here. Oh.
And on that, talking about jobs that you can have outside of the sort of artist's realm, What kind of jobs would you sort of suggest, or what kind of jobs are you finding that people are getting as you're doing consultancy with people that isn't yoga teaching and drama teaching?
If that's what brings you joy, I absolutely go do for it. But if it's not like the thing that lights you up and you're just doing it because you're like, oh, you know, I guess I should maybe teach, then it's, you know, I used to teach kids music theater classes. And then I went, I don't actually like kids or teaching, so I don't know why I'm doing this. What I say to people is, and to steal an acting term, to have a playful curiosity about things in your life that come really easily to you and you enjoy. So for me, budgets, I love it. When I get stressed, I empty out my piggy bank and I count my coins, and that makes me feel better because I can look at that and go, it's been a long time since I was in a position where it was like, I can't keep a roof over my head. But for some reason, looking at like $400 in coins on my floor makes me go, no matter what happens, that money is there. That sounds ridiculous. That sounds so, but you know, it comes easily to me and it brings me joy. I would bully people into letting me look at their budget and helping them with their finances. And so there might be something just something really, there's a podcast that I really enjoy called Cashflow for Creatives, which is an American woman who started, she was an actor in LA, and then she started organizing the houses of like these big Hollywood creatives, literally going into their offices and setting up systems for them and making it look attractive. And it got to the point where she's like, I don't actually enjoy my acting and I'm ready to let that go. I'm ready to close that chapter on my life because this brings me so much fulfillment. And now she works as someone who helps creatives find a similar balance in their own life. And I don't want people to be like, oh, I don't want to find something else that brings me joy because then I won't enjoy my creative pursuit anymore. But that chapter will close when it's ready for you to close, is sort of what I say to people. So there may come a point where it doesn't fulfill you anymore, and that's okay. You're not quitting. You're just going, that's served its purpose in my life and I'm so happy I pursued that. But now, because that's all we do, it's humans. We want things that bring us joy. So that's sometimes something that people worry about, is going, I'm going to find this amazing thing and I'm going to enjoy it more than acting that I've given my last 10 years to. And you go, I'm sorry, you've found something more enjoyable than the thing that's brought you the most joy in the last 10 years. That's amazing. Congratulations. And you can always act. You can always do that. So it was a little tangent. Sorry, I got distracted. Where were we talking about? Oh, thanks. Yes. So finding something that comes, and it doesn't have to be your big passion. It just has to come easily to you. It has to not leave you drained and absolutely tapped out at the end of the day. And something else that I really recommend is low financial threshold to get in and really easy to size up and size down. Because what you ideally want, and this is something that I absolutely got from Christine Oller, who has the Cashflow Creatives and I love, is that you want something that's going to grow and shrink with your career, so that if you're in a bit of a dry spell, you can go, I'm going to pour all my energy into this thing, be it creating printables on Etsy or creating resources for drama teachers, because there's a fantastic website. I think it's called By Teachers for Teachers, where teachers buy like printables and class plans and things. And you might be creating those for drama teachers, and teachers in Canada might be buying that to work on with their students. If you're like, you know what? I love planning lessons, but I don't actually like children. Guess what? Other people hate planning lessons and love children. They're your market. Go for it. But you want something where you can sort of expand it in a dry spell. Then if you book a show or you're on a set, you can shrink it down. And it's just there running in the background, and you might not be getting as much money from it, but you don't need it. It's that little buffer to sort of shrink and contract. So if you've got something that you have to sink $6,000 into before you make a cent, it's probably not going to be the best avenue for you. You really want something that's going to support your career. You need that little parachute. It's kind of like, this is like, it's a bit of a weird analogy, but you need a sugar daddy and it needs to be you. You need something that's going to be like, hey, sweetie, I know you really want to do that acting class. It's $600. Or like, I know things are a little rough right now. Here's $100 to go and buy groceries. You need something that's going to look after you, and it just has to be you.
Love that. <That's so
good. laughs> It's a weird analogy, but yeah, that's what I want. I just want someone to swoop in and take care of all my financial problems. Unfortunately, it just has to be me.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really sounding like you have to really be savvy in as you say, in knowing what you are good at and that comes easily to you, and finding the market for that perhaps outside of the artistic world. Because you're so right, we do settle for crumbs and any opportunity to perform, and yeah, it's enjoyable, but it often leaves you with no money and no time. So yeah, that's a great idea. I'm going to like get thinking now.
Keep a little notepad. And if you do something and you're like, I love this, I could do this all day, I'm going to ask, like gift wrapping. You know, how many people have like, you know what? I would love to work at the gift wrapper at the Christmas shop thing. But if that's genuinely something you enjoy, I mean, not right now, definitely not a COVID safe activity, but random little obscure things where you're like, I love this so much, I'm going to finish this and then ask my friends if I can do it for them too. That's probably like a good place to start. And I think you're so right about looking outside our own sphere, because so many artists make things for artists. but there's so many billion other people in the world. And just because you love being a creative doesn't mean that what's funding your creative career also has to be creative. You might find some random obscure thing like, hello, money. I see it as creative. Not a lot of people do, but it's sort of, it funds and it fuels my enthusiasm. And the deeper into it I go, the more I'm like, oh, I can see so many skills that I can bring into my own creative career outside of this. And I mean, I'm cheating a little bit because I am keeping it in the industry, but you might not. You know, there might be something that's so bizarre. You've never thought about it, but you've always really enjoyed it. And you might not realize that there's a market for it. Like that teacher's principles thing. I had never thought that was a thing. But of course, it makes sense. My mum was a primary school teacher. The amount of paperwork they need to create for every lesson and printables and colouring charts and marking sheets. And of course, if someone handed that to them in a packet, they would be weeping tears of joy. So if you can give that to them, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And I think that's where the Free the Artist came from. Sorry, just to sort of, my brain is a bit all over the place. But the Free the Artist, because freedom is being able to pursue what you want when you want. And so if someone went, I mean, this is not great and I don't condone it, but if someone's like, I have this amazing indie feature, we're shooting for 4 weeks in WA, the team is fantastic, we can't pay you. Don't condone taking it. But if you do want to take it, the difference between being able to take it, not really sure how you're going to make it work, possibly relying on loans, maybe having to give up your rental or knowing that it's all going to have on credit card, versus being able to look at your finances and go, yeah, that's no worries. I'll do that. That sounds great. That's freedom. Freedom isn't like $1 million in the bank and being able to fly to Paris or whatever when you want to, although that would be great. It's being able to make decisions based on what's best for you and not what you can afford, because your money is just there in your corner to back you up.
I want to ask about tax quickly. Doing your own tax, getting a person to do tax for you, being able to claim things as an artist on tax. I know that you said that you can't really speak on it too much, but would you recommend learning how to do your own taxes or going to someone else and trying to explain that you can perhaps get more tax off by saying, oh, I needed to buy this and this and this for this professional performance I was in?
I think having a knowledge of your situation and the tax laws is never going to hurt you. But I do think going to an accountant that has been recommended by other artists, that's the thing, because there are so many accountants and they're all great at many things. But if you've got one who actually understands what is and is not deductible for you as a creative, that can make a huge difference. And you may not agree with everything they're saying, but unfortunately, tax law is what it is and we can't fight them on every detail. But you want someone in your corner who understands you, who's not going to be like $700 for photos of your face. Are you crazy? You know, and then you paid someone $300 to paint it for you, that you need someone who's going to be like, yeah, okay, I see those classes, I see those fishnets, I see those headshots, and know what is and isn't deductible, and is going to help you understand that as well, I think is really important, so that you can, each year as you work with them, you can start to look at investments that you're making in your career and have a better sense of whether or not they are deductible. As opposed to, I think there's a huge tendency in the industry to sort of be like, it's deductible. Like that means it's 100% free, which is not at all how tax deductions work. So, and I think people will sometimes use it to try and convince people to buy things like this class, you know, it's an investment and it's tax deductible. And you're like, well, no, you can't be telling me what is and is not deductible for me as a person. The only person who can be telling you that is an accountant and the tax department. So definitely having a professional in your field and in your corner who's going to work with you on that and who understands your industry is going to be so invaluable, because tax time should be your favorite time. You know, whether that's because you get a tax return or whether that's because you've been diligently putting away your tax every pay cycle, every time you get contracted. And because of this fantastic accountant, you've got the money there, or you don't even have to pay all the money you have, but you need someone in your corner who's going to help you with that. because it's huge and convoluted. And while the ATO has an amazing website, and if you've got like a very simple tax return, could be beautiful. There's a fantastic chat function on there to ask questions and things. Creatives' tax returns can get really complicated.
Amazing. I want to ask, what is one thing that we can do now as artists to be more financially savvy? Probably for me, it's buying so many coffees and spending about
$30 a week on coffee.
So what is one thing that we can do now that will be really helpful for us in the future financially?
I think one thing, like if you're going to do one thing this afternoon as you listen to this, is to actually know what's happening with your money. So sitting down with a 30-day bank statement and actually adding up or looking at where that money is going, how much money is going on coffees, how much money is going on Uber Eats, how much money are you spending on classes or self-tapes, and then multiplying that by 12 and looking at that figure. And so if $30 a week is like your daily joy and that is your little thing, no one can tell you whether that is or isn't the right thing to be doing with your money as long as you're happy with it. So if you were spending $2,000 on coffees a year, but I came to you and was like, hey, if I gave you an unlimited coffee card for $2,000, how does that make you feel? And if you're like, yes, absolutely, totally worth it, that's my one treat and I do it and I live for the time of day where I get to go get a coffee, then that's between you and your money. But if you're looking at it and you're going, oh shit, I spend $6,000 a year on Uber Eats, which is easier than it sounds, then you know, then that's going to start ticking your background in the background of your brain. So just looking at your money to start with and know where it's going. Because at the end of the day, no matter what you say your values in life are, if you look at your money, that's where your real values are. So you might say that you're, you know, acting is your passion and it's everything and you'll give anything to succeed. But if you're spending $500 a year investing in your acting career and $6,000 a year on Uber Eats, that's where your real value is. So just being aware of it and sort of looking critically at what your money is doing is a great place to start. And you might find if there's something that shocks you there, those money habits will start changing naturally because they'll just keep ticking around in the back of your brain. So I think more important than a budget or anything else as a starting step, just being critical and honest with yourself about where your money is actually going.
Yeah, wow. Oh, I want to like clap that. That's like so good. Yeah.
So good, especially being students and having not disposable money, but like having a bit more freedom of like, oh, well, you know, all of our training is now on like the Hexbet and all of that kind of stuff. So whatever we get week to week is kind of going towards, you know, food because we're tired and get Uber Eats or coffees because, again, we're tired and whatever. But I think especially because we're about to graduate, that's going to be such a vital thing to check in with when we're, you know, going out into the industry and stuff.
And it's actually a great time to be – oh, sorry, I was just going to say it's a great time to be resetting habits if you're somewhere like Melbourne where things aren't open because you can be like, oh, I don't actually miss brunch. That's weird. It's just something to sort of carry with you as things open up again. Yeah, yes, your totally. Question, sorry.
My question, and it's kind of something that shocked me when I was listening to She's on the Money. I was a really late person to the party for it. But Afterpay and living in debt, what is some advice that you can give on that, especially for people who don't have, you know, a week-to-week budget necessarily and we're kind of living on chunks of payment? What do you think about living on debt? And I guess lay-by is not really a thing anymore, but, you know, having payment
plans. You can't
take
your 50 cents down to Toy World.
No. but, yeah, I guess, like, there are some things like Afterpay or payment plans that are available to people today. And what's your kind of advice on that?
I think I'm going to steal Victoria from She's on the Money. She has a fantastic quote that she said, which is, debt is stealing from your future self. So something like Afterpay can be fantastic if, and just to sort of swing it back around to creatives, although I don't know if there's any acting schools offering Afterpay, but if there's some sort of, you know, $1,000 class and it's going to let you break that down into manageable payments, then that can be used as a tool wisely to sort of manage your expenses. But unfortunately, that's not really how we use it. We use it to justify spending money on clothes, or we use it to sort of justify splurges. And the thing is that once you've made the purchase, that satisfaction and that dopamine hit, which is what it is when you get what you want, there's that split second and absence of wanting, and you get that dopamine hit that wears off, and then the payments live on. And if you go for that dopamine hit again and again and again, then those payments just keep getting bigger and bigger. And all you're doing is making sure that you can't get the things you really want because you've stuck with this debt. And a lot of the times, and something that I work with people on, is the reason that we're purchasing may not be, this is a great dress and I want it. It could be that we're feeling insecure about what we look like, and so that one dress is going to make us sexy for the next audition. Or it could be that you're feeling depressed, and so you want that dopamine hit of signing up for that thing. Or, and so looking again with like a playful curiosity at your, it's exactly like acting, looking at your why, looking at why you're doing something and digging down and going, do I want that dress because I know I look great in that shade of green? Or do I want that dress because I sat in the waiting room at an audition with someone who I thought was a million times more attractive than me, and I felt like trash, and I'm trying to make myself feel better? And I keep bringing it back to that because maybe that's something I do sometimes, and being like, I feel like a hideous troll. What does ASOS have on sale? And a better thing to do is to, it's sort of like a preemptive afterpay, and automate some of your money habits so that every week you're putting money aside for something, whether it be, I highly recommend that all creatives put money aside every week for their career. So instead of having to afterpay something, you can look at your career account or whatever you want to call it and go, ah, I've got $1,500 in there. I can absolutely do that $200 choreographer workshop, because instead of having future you deal with it, past you is all over it, and they've got your back, and they're set up those habits to make sure that that money's there. And again, that's freedom. You know, a lot of people think they want to be rich, but really all they want to do is have the money to do what they want. And so setting up those habits, and even if it's like setting up a clothing fund so that instead of buying trashy whatever on sale on ASOS that's going to sit in your wardrobe with tags on forever, and I'm sorry for any dudes listening, this is very me specific right now, so it's, you know, it's about clothes. You can set up a fund so that you can buy that one incredible, you know, sustainably produced linen whatever that I may have just bought, and that's probably going to serve you better. Instead of it being like an impulse driven, I don't have the money right now, but I need it. I need that thing that they're selling me, and having to pay for that so much longer than the enjoyment of wearing the item lasts. You can get proactive about it and start putting that money away, so when that urge hits, you can make a more educated choice. Because I think, no, I've lost the train of thought. What do I think? Tell me what I think.
No, I love that idea of the preemptive afterpay. And if a beautiful, sustainable linen piece of clothing is important to you, which that sounds fabulous, I'd love to see what you bought.
It's super cute. It'll be great. It'll be all over my Instagram.
Perfect. Well, putting that money aside, yeah, preemptively, so you're not sort of living in debt, and you come to the week of your afterpay and you can't actually afford to pay the $50 every fortnight for it.
Yeah. And one incredible, absolutely perfect, looks amazing on you, smash it out of the ballpark outfit is going to do so much more for you than a bunch of $20 impulse buys that you wear once and they aren't really perfect, but you felt good when you were buying them. And casting directors don't care if you wear the same thing in every audition. If it makes you look like a goddess or a god, then they're going to be like, ah, that person, ah, that's right. They wear that amazing thing and they look fantastic. Like you... It's knowing what is going to be good for you in the long term. I remember what I was going to say before. Something we forget is that every single time these shops have contact with you, whether that be a Facebook ad, whether that be sliding into your inbox, these people And I'm not just talking about clothing companies. I'm talking about almost every single email and every single thing you see on your social media is designed to separate you from your money. That is its sole purpose. It might be to educate and to entertain, but only so they can keep you on the line for long enough to separate you from your money. So being aware of that and sort of being a little bit more critical about who you let into your inbox and your social media can really help take back control so you can actually make decisions that are good for you and not good for their CEO.
Yes, and that rings so much for me because I, a couple of weeks ago, oh, maybe like 3 weeks ago or something, I bought a hat online because I saw an advert and they were like, you buy a hat, we plant 10 trees. And I went, oh my God. And that person is exploring and going around, you know, in a caravan and they look amazing and they planted 10 trees. I'm going to do the same thing. Now my hat is sitting in the wardrobe and I wondered why the hell I bought it. Because in the moment I thought it was great and I thought I was doing a good thing, but now it's just sitting there and I can only use it on very rare occasions. So I'm
I have a whole pile of hats because I think I'm going to be a hat wearer. I never wear a hat. Some people look great in them. I look like I thought I, well, I do frequently think I'm going to get sunburned even in the middle of winter, you know? I'm not a hat person, but I want to be a hat person. It's time to be honest with myself.
Love that. Abigail, thank you so much for today. I have learnt a lot. You're so eloquent and you have a lot of wisdom about this. And I would love to do a part two and have a Q&A potentially with our listeners as well and see if they can bring any questions to you too, because I think it's such an important topic that we need to talk about more actively.
So I would love that. Yes. Let's unite as a community and be like, screw the starving artist. We're affluent, stable, creatively energized artists. Snappy, but you know, it means that we're going to be able to cope better in the long run.
Amen. Love that. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
You're so welcome.
We loved that interview with Abby. It was so good. And I really, really wanted a part two because I felt like there was so much more that we had to chat to her about. So please hop onto our Instagram and Facebook and send us some questions for her.
Part two. Because I feel like I'm really unknowledgeable in that area of life. So I felt like I should have had more questions and more specific ones, but I just didn't. It was like a, you know, financials for dummies episode. So let's delve in more in episode two, I reckon.
Yeah. No, I love her. She's got a great energy about her too. Like she made me excited about budgeting and financing. And I feel like not many people can do that.
Yeah, she made it seem fun.
Yeah.
And I've never thought it to be fun.
Exactly. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Company. If you like this episode, please leave a rating review on Instagram or Facebook at Company Pod. If you'd like to hear more from Abby, check her out at abby@freetheartist.com or on Instagram at freetheartistcoaching.
Thank you to our producing guru, Douglas Rintel, our media queen, Deidre Koo, who's also known as Deedledum Designs, and our music man, David Duquettes. We'll see you next time.
Bye.